later on that winter, we was set out our trap line, and we had it running over a ridge for about 10 miles and hit the river. Then we went downriver to a cabin. Well, there was a man that was trapping about 20 miles beyond us. He wasn't much of a woodsman. He was a man of 40, 45, but he just didn't belong in the woods. That's all there was to it. And one day he come into our cabin, and he was going out. He's going to quit. He hadn't caught anything. He just decided to go out. Well, there was nothing to fall on that trail over the ridge. It was just simple as could be. The wind had blowed on the river and covered up our tracks after we got off the mountain. But we never thought anything of that, and so he put a little pack on his back and started over the trail. Well, the next time we went over the trail, just two or three days after that, why, he had hit the river, and he didn't know which way to go. Well, that was a funny thing about a man getting lost. He gets excited, and he wants to run. Well, that man's tracks just showed where he'd run one way a while, he'd run the other way a while, and he'd fall in the snow. And he was just excited, and he got himself all warmed up and froze to death right there. You'll see those things there. You just can't get away from them. Odd things happened in that cabin. You know, we was just building it in the fall, and we went up on the lake for something, and it was a kind of a pass through there that occasionally somebody come through. Well, this, we found two horse tracks where somebody come through on horses. Of course, we didn't know who they was. We didn't know a thing about them. And they didn't know we were there. They had to come down to camp. And anyhow, we went back to camp, thought nothing of it. Oh, several days afterwards, my partner said to me, he said, "Slim, there's smoke up there towards that mountain." We watched a while. Sure enough, we could see smoke. Well, I said, "I'll go up and see what it was." He was getting some bacon bread and some cake, and he was really doing a job of cooking. He liked to do them. Pretty good cook, too. Well, anyhow, I slung my rifle over my shoulder and went up, and I got pretty close to the fire, and I could see a man sitting there all humped over. Got up a little closer, and he was a long-legged dude. He must have been 6'2" or 6'3", and quite skinny. And man of 50, 55. He had his hand over his knee, around his knees, and his knee drawed up under his chin, and kind of leaning on his hand. Small fire. It wasn't cold. I walked up right opposite him out of the fire. I wasn't over 6 feet from him. About that time, he looked up and see me. When he let the awfulest yell out of me, he said, "Hey, mister, I'd like to speak to you." Well, I said, "You've heard him for 2 miles. Well, I said, "I'm right here. Just go ahead and talk." And when he lowered his voice down to almost a whisper, he said, "You got any grub on you?" Well, I said, "No, I haven't, but I got some right down the camp here." Well, he said, "You know, I haven't seen any of that enemy for about 3 days. And he said, "I'm just getting kind of hungry." Well, I said, "Come on, go down to camp." So he had a double-bitted axe. And he was just crazy as a loon, you know. He just talked all screwy. He seen this man way below on the river that comes through with the horses. And what the best I could make out, he's up on the glacier and got lost and got back off again. And it's been 7, 8 days since he had something to eat. But he had this big double-bitted axe. And, so I took the axe. I just didn't want anything like that falling with a double-bitted axe, I'm telling you. So I took his axe. I said, "Let me take the axe. I'm better able to carry it." And, well, he stumbled along, and you could see that he's all wore out. I got him down to camp. Kind of whispered my partner about 8 days since he had something to eat, be careful, and didn't want to feed him too much right off, make him sick. So I cooked him a little oatmeal, and we had a little milk we put on him, a couple of tablespoons full, gave him that, and told him we'd feed him again pretty soon, that he had to be careful. Oh, yes, he was a perfect gentleman, had it all right. He knew he had to be taken care of, but yet he was loony as a March hare. My partner stepped out for something, I don't know what now, but we was cooking some dried apples. We had a box about 5 pound there that we'd been taking them out of. He was sitting on the bunk, and I stepped out for something. I don't know what it was now, maybe it would, but when I come back in, that fella had both hands full of them dried apples, and he was just stuffing them in his face as hard as he could. Well, it scared me. I knew he couldn't eat a lot of them dried apples. I couldn't eat many, but I grabbed him and shook him and finally shook him loose from the dried apples. And he apologized and said, well, that is all right, but he just couldn't hardly help it. And so we fed him about every hour until long bedtime and figured that better sleep a while now and get the man some rest. So I took him to bed with me, and I tied his wrist to mine. Well, he'd wake up in the night and he'd let some of the most unearthly yells out of me ever heard. Boy, he'd just ring the woods with them yells, you know. And I'd jerk him and get him to himself and wake him up. And, oh, he's sorry, and he'd lay down again. Got up several times during the night and feed him. And after 2 or 3 days, well, his mind kind of cleared up and he got to be pretty good. And after about a week, well, he was in just the pink of condition. So we took him about 6 miles and turned him out onto a trail. And he got out all right. He left us a note at the post office that he got out. Later on that winter, I got the toothache. And boy, did I have a toothache. Well, I had some pliers, and I stuck them in the stove, and I'd get them hot, and I'd pound them, and get them hot some more, and pound them some more, and filed them, and finally I got what I thought was a pair of faucets to pull that tooth. I give him a partner, I said, now pull her out. Oh, no, nothing doing. I'd get blood poison. Might break a jaw. He'd heard of such a thing. No, he wasn't going to pull it. Well, I couldn't talk him into it, and I just, well, let him alone. So I put on my snowshoes, and I hit off down country. About 50 miles, I run into a couple of trappers. Well, give them a flyer, want this tooth out. Oh, no, nothing doing. Couldn't see it that way. Don't tell them what had happened. No, they couldn't pull a tooth. Well, nothing for me to do but to go on about another 60 miles to a roadhouse. 4 or 5 fellas there. And they had a pair of forceps. I don't know how, old rusty things, I don't know how they come to happen there, but they did. And I tried to get them to pull the tooth. Nothing doing. They wouldn't pull that tooth. No. Well, it is still 150 miles to where I get it pulled. I didn't want to go on that far. And finally, a great big strapping young kid come in. He'd weigh 250 pounds, I believe. He's a moose of a kid. And wasn't too smart anyhow. And I said, here, kid, pull this tooth. All right, he'd pull it. So he got hold of that tooth of them fossils. Well, boy, he just drugged me all over that house and twisted and pulled and yanked and no tooth come. Finally let go, he said, I can't do it. So it, oh boy, then it was just running me nuts. And I dug up the phosphorus again. I said, try it again, kid. And he did. He grabbed hold of it again and he squeezed and he jerked and finally cut it off. It broke off right at the gum, just smooth. Well, that pulled the nerve out and it quit aching. Boy, it felt better. Well, I started back home and got up to this cabin, and the thermometer was down 65, 67, 68, 70, 71. And I said, oh, that, I want to get back to my trap. And I said, ah, that's wrong. Can't be. I'm going on. So I started. Well, I hadn't got very far till I knew I was wrong because she was cold. I pulled my parkie over to my face the best I could, but that didn't help much. And there was a cabin about 12 miles up. No, it wasn't a cabin. It was built up of logs about 3 feet. And then there was a tent on top of that with about 3 feet walls. Well, there was a good stove in there, and there was a rack above the stove that somebody built to put their dry their socks and footwear on. And about the time I got there, a breeze started to blow. Not a hard wind, but just a breeze. And boy, it whistled through them logs and just froze my legs. I'd build that fire up just hot as I could, and then I'd get up on that sock rack to get above the logs and into the canvas where, and then I was above where the heat down a little bit and fill up the stove and then crawl back up on the rack again. And that's what's the matter with my voice now. I frosted my lungs. But the next spring, I went out to a doctor. I was just like I had a bad cold all the time. And I went out to a doctor, a gruff sort of fellow, knew him very well. And he examined me, and he jerked me around for about 2 days. And he said, well, Slim, he said, I don't know. He says, you know, when a dog freezes his lungs, he says, he dies right now. He says, when a horse freezes his lungs, he dies the next spring. He says, I don't know just when you're going to die. But he said, I've heard you talk about some sisters you had out in California. He said, if I was you, I'd just go and see them. Well, that wasn't very much consolation, but there's just so much country that I wanted to see that I just went on seeing her. I'll tell you that. Got all right, I guess. Voice didn't sound so good, but then otherwise I think I'm healthy. The next spring, it found us up. You know, you have a lot of different partners in the North Country, especially when you stay there as long as I have. One partner will take a notion to do something else. I played a lone hand an awful lot. But when I found a fellow was a good partner, well, I preferred to have him. Well, this year, I found a partner who's a dandy. We had to tow up the Copper River for about 20 miles. Well, you do that, you hook your dogs on a tow line about 100 feet long. What I like to do that with a piece of walrus hide. You know, walrus hide is the strongest hide there is. You can take a piece of that as big as a number 9 wire and it's pretty near strong. Well, this piece I had was about twice that size and plenty strong, so I'd hook my dogs on in front of it on this long line. Then you would tie a long pole to the nose of your boat, and the dogs would pull. Well, you would hold the boat out away from the shore, not too much. You had your pole tied, so in case your boat started to slip away and go out into the river, well, you could pull it back because your dogs just couldn't. You'd have just pulled your dogs right into the river if it ever started to turn around. So you had to be pretty cautious about what you were doing. But I had dogs that understood their business. And we'd go up the river bar and we'd come to a bank. And then we would load dogs, everything into the sled and cross the river and go up the other side. And got along fine, do about 20 miles a day that way. Well, we come to the Sanford River. Well, now the Sanford is a wildcat in the summertime. It's strictly a glacier stream. And in summertime on a hot day, well, there's enough water comes out of there to run a steamboat up it if a steamboat was strong enough. But when fall comes, it gets down to a very quiet little stream. Well, down close to the Copper, it just didn't get split up and we couldn't take a boat. So we packed our stuff up about 5 miles and towed the boat up empty. So we made a camp and we was a wondering